The Egyptian pyramids are without a doubt the most mysterious structures on planet Earth. We do not know when they were built, how they were built, who built them, and most importantly, why they were built. The Great Pyramid weighs nearly 6 million tons and consists of 2.3 million stones that are cut and fit together with laser precision. Many of these massive stones, which weigh as much as 80 tons, had to be transported from vast distances of more than 500 miles away. For thousands of years, it stood as the tallest unnatural structure in the world. Certainly, there must have been a good reason to go to all this trouble to construct such a wondrous monument, and we now know that it certainly was not a tomb. Nikola Tesla, who is perhaps the greatest inventor of all time, had a particular infatuation with the pyramids. He believed they served a higher purpose, and throughout his career he attempted to unravel their mystery. His idea has been dismissed and forgotten over the last century, but considering that Tesla is directly responsible for 80% of the technology we use today, perhaps we should view his theories with a more open mind. Today's episode is a brilliant showcase from the original Gaia series, Ancient Civilizations. We chose this episode because it opens the gate to new possibilities and new perspectives surrounding the pyramids. We ask you to suspend your disbelief and take a journey down the rabbit hole through this insightful presentation.
In 1905, physics genius Nikola Tesla submitted his U.S. patent 787412, which was titled The Art of Transmitting Electrical Energy Through the Natural Medium. It included designs for a series of worldwide generators. Tesla realized that the ionosphere was sparkling with electrical energy which could easily be tapped. Planet Earth, according to Tesla, was a gigantic electrical generator spinning around two magnetic poles from which limitless energy can be harnessed using the right medium or shape. His device was later referred to as Tesla's electromagnetic pyramid, based on his design looking like a triangle shape.
Tesla tapping into the actual shape of the pyramid, I believe, was something that just came roundabout through his investigation into the location of the pyramids. Because what appears to have happened is that he realized that it wasn't the actual shape of the pyramid so much, although pyramids exhibit fractal energy much more efficiently than other types of designs. But what he discovered was it was the location of the pyramids that created the power. And when he built his facility here in Colorado Springs, and then on the East Coast, he did so according to the laws of where the pyramids at Giza were constructed. And it had to do with the elliptical orbit of the Earth and those sites' relationship to the actual equator, that there was a natural construction somehow taking place between those very specific sites and the overall energy field of the Earth. And because of that, he believed he could transmit power wirelessly.
Tesla's discovery and device disappeared after his mysterious death in 1943. But what he was trying to tap into might have just scratched the surface of understanding the power of something much more ancient.
According to Nikola Tesla, 369 is the key to the universe. Tesla became so obsessed with this 369 that he would drive around a building three times before going inside of it.
He cleaned his plates with 18 napkins, lived in hotel rooms only with the number divisible by three. He made calculations about things in their immediate environment just to make sure the result was conceivable by three. And he based his choices on the results. He did everything in sets of three. What is Nikola Tesla trying to make us understand? We must understand that we did not create mathematics. We discovered them. It is the universal language and law. No matter where in the universe you are, 1 + 2 will always equal 3. Everything in the universe obeys this law. These forms are in nature, but the ancients emulated these forms in construction.
If Nikola Tesla's obsession was with these numbers, and his goal was to define his location and time in space, could it be possible that ancient humans created monuments like the Great Pyramids to remind us of these truths?
In Sumerian tradition and in the surviving texts, there is a very strong and intriguing reference to what are called the seven antediluvian sages, the seven sages who came before the flood. And their leader is a figure called Oannes. We find that he is depicted as a man, but curiously, he's wearing a sort of fish garb or a fish costume. Archaeologists often refer to him as a fish-garbed figure. And the other seven sages are also dressed in this fish costume. So you see the legs of a human being and the face and features of a bearded human being, but then he's wearing on his head the head of a fish, and the body of a fish hangs down his back. It's a very curious idea, really. And he and all of them hold in their hands a curious little bag, which I tend to refer to as a man bag. I see them as a kind of badge of office, a recognizable symbol where perhaps members of a brotherhood would be able to recognize one another by their carrying of this symbol. It's curious that we see a figure holding the same bag that we see on the Sumerian reliefs and holding it in exactly the same way. And not only that, but those same bags turn up on top of Pillar 43 in Enclosure D at Göbekli Tepe, where we know that they're at least 11,600 years old. The tradition is clearly rooted before the flood. Then comes the flood. The cataclysm wipes everything out, but that brotherhood persists through the flood. And after the flood, they are again offering the gifts of civilization to mankind.
Could Oannes and his sages have reemerged after the cataclysmic flood to teach the knowledge of the universe? In Sumerian cuneiforms, Enki is sometimes depicted as a bearded man wearing a fish costume and sometimes carrying a bag. Interesting to note that in the Egyptian depictions of gods, they are not holding a bag, but an important symbol called the Ankh. The Ankh depicts immortality and life. It is also connected with Isis and the planet Venus. Could these carrying devices be transmitting the same kind of energy? Anton Park's research has traced the reemergence of Enki to Egypt, and as a byproduct of his death, the building of the Great Pyramid.
La pyramide, je pense, a été créée pour refaire.
In my view, the Great Pyramid was built by Isis. I believe it was created to reincarnate Osiris into Horus. It is quite complicated. The Osirian, the so-called aquatic temple dedicated to Osiris in Abydos, Abaju in Egyptian, means it is located in the city, which is, according to Egyptian history, the first city of Osiris. Yet, to be able to find seashells on a temple located in the middle of the desert, you have to go back thousands of years, at least 10,000 years. Why would he have made such a temple with aquatic features? Because Osiris, who is also Enki, they are the same person, had amphibian genes. Osiris, Enki, was killed by his nemesis Set, who is in fact Enlil, during one of their many battles. It took place in Abydos, which also corresponds to the Sumerian Apsu, where Osiris's aquatic temple can be found. The texts clearly state that all of Osiris's servants were slaughtered during a battle, as well as Osiris himself, who was crucified on a tree. This is how he died. Isis is quite a character. She can't really be found in Mesopotamian literature, although she could be considered the goddess Ninti. She is the woman who lives in the great deeps, underground. I think that these underground passageways could correspond to the ones we can find under the Giza Plateau. We know that the Giza Plateau is full of underground passages. I believe that the clan of Osiris lived there. As far as the resurrection of Osiris into Horus is concerned, Isis organizes it. The texts are very clear about that. And we understand that she used Osiris's genetic code to create Horus. She created the Great Pyramid in order to accomplish this task. The Great Pyramid allowed Isis to find Osiris's soul again. We don't really know how, but she would have put Horus's genetic code in the pyramid. She would have been able to create another body using Osiris's genetic code, the so-called UF, in Egyptian, body. And thanks to the coding of the Great Pyramid, she reached Osiris's soul so it could come into the new body of Horus.
Although the dating of the Great Pyramid has been argued by different scientists, there is evidence that below the monument, something existed there that was much older.
When we look at the Great Pyramid, the Second Pyramid, and Third Pyramid, there's no doubt in my mind that they were being reused, should we say, partially reconstructed, built upon during dynastic times. Just like the Sphinx itself was being repaired during dynastic times. But I'm also convinced that at least the core of those pyramids, particularly the Great Pyramid and the Second Pyramid, go back to a much earlier period. So for instance, the Great Pyramid is actually built on what I would call a sacred mound. And this is acknowledged even by the Egyptologists. Now they say it all goes back to the fourth dynasty, circa, 2500 BC. But my analysis is that at least the core, the original portions, for instance, the descending passage, the subterranean chamber, go back to a much earlier period. Then it was built over, and I think some of that building over it goes back to prior to dynastic times.
Could this be proof of the clan of Osiris and their knowledge? And could this group have harnessed the powers of the universe to bring back a god? Some experts point to the fact that the Great Pyramid itself has always been connected with the afterlife.
What you'll find inside those pyramids is acres and acres and acres of texts, deeply inscribed into the walls. They belong to the same vast body of literature to which belongs the famous ancient Egyptian Book of the Dead. And the ultimate moment in your journey through the Duat is your entry into the Judgment Hall of Osiris, the Hall of Maat, and where you will be asked to account for everything that you've done with your life. So it seems to me very clear that the Great Pyramid is part of an attempt to create a three-dimensional model of the afterlife realm.
If the ancient text from both Sumerian cuneiforms and Egyptian books suggest the Great Pyramid as a place to resurrect the dead, could there be another hidden message?
There is an ancient code to be found within the Great Pyramid. It's within the geometry, not just of the pyramid itself, but its relationship to the other two main pyramids of the Giza Plateau. Having studied this for a number of years, it seems to be related very much to do with the idea of the music of the spheres, the idea that there is some kind of connection between the primal tones of the universe itself and their relationship to the creation of form and structure in the physical world, and that to somehow attune and enhance this connection, that certain proportions have to be constructed into the design of the pyramid and also the geometry of the landscape itself. And these seem to reflect the musical intervals, in particular those which are known as the perfect fourth, which has a ratio of 4-3, and those known as the perfect fifth, as a ratio of 3-2, one of which is an inverse form of the other.
If the Great Pyramid is indeed a construction to harmonize creation, wherein lies the code to such a great power?
Many people don't know this, but in fact it's not a four-sided pyramid. It has a very slight concavity on each side, making it an eight-sided pyramid. Now, the minute you do this, you not only complicate the design tremendously, but it produces rather bizarre geometry. So this geometry, when we analyze it, produces numbers. Numbers keep popping out. Numbers that shouldn't be there. Things like universal constants. Constants that has been known for over 100 years. The phi constant, the golden ratio, but we have now strange numbers like Euler's number coming up in the design.
Could this geometry produce a message?
The Great Pyramid is situated within a whisker of latitude 30. It seems like the latitude choice was derived from astronomy because there's a lens effect of the atmosphere of the Earth, and when you take that into account, the tiny error shy of latitude 30 goes away. They were on astronomical latitude 30, if you like. It seems like a very deliberate choice because it's not a random latitude. It's one third of the way between the equator and the North Pole. This is just one of the many ways, I feel, in which the Great Pyramid deliberately and purposefully speaks to our planet. The next way it does that is that it is aligned. But if you take upon yourself the project of building a pyramid and aligning it to true north, south, east, and west, you wouldn't make any error at all. There is an error in the Great Pyramid. It's tiny. It's 3/60ths of a single degree off true north. This is almost eerie precision because the scale of the monument is so huge. This thing is 481 feet high. It has a footprint of 13, slightly more than 13 acres. It weighs 6 million tons. It consists of 2.5 million individual blocks of stone. You're taking that whole gigantic mountain of stone and you are aligning it within just 3/60ths of a single degree of true north. We're not talking about magnetic north, which varies. We're talking about astronomical north, the true north of this planet. It's a very remarkable thing, and that's the north of this planet. Once again, the Great Pyramid is speaking to the Earth.
Could the pyramid be revealing something else about our planet?
Then you find something else as you go deeper. Start measuring the Great Pyramid. Measure it very, very, very precisely. Measure its base perimeter. And then measure its height. And scale those numbers up. What you find is that at a scale of 1 to 43,200, and I'll explain why that's not a random scale in a moment, on a scale of 1 to 43,200, the dimensions of the pyramid give you the dimensions of this planet. In other words, if you measure the base perimeter of the Great Pyramid and multiply it by 43,200, you get the equatorial circumference of the Earth. And if you measure the height of the Great Pyramid and multiply it by 43,200, you get the polar radius of the Earth. So in all those centuries and millennia, when our ancestors went through the Dark Ages and didn't even know that they were living on a planet, let alone the dimensions of the planet, all they ever had to do was go accurately measure the Great Pyramid, multiply those numbers by 43,200, and they have the dimensions of our planet.
Could this be the evidence to suggest that ancient places like the Great Pyramid are here to always show us our place in the stars?
Egyptologists are aware of this, but they say it's a total coincidence. There's no significance to it whatsoever, as far as Egyptologists are concerned. And you know, if the scale were something different, if it were 1 to 57,000 or 1 to 42,000 even, they could be right. The reason they're not right is that the scale is not random. The scale is defined by a key motion of the Earth itself. Our Earth, as well as spinning on its own axis, has a wobble on its axis. That's called precession. Rather, the effect that you get if you set a spinning top spinning. As it begins to slow down, it begins to wobble, and the top of the top begins to transcribe a circle. The Earth does that. If you take the extended north pole of the Earth and extend it out into the heavens, you'll find that today in our time, it's pointing at a star we call Polaris. That's our pole star. But it hasn't always pointed at Polaris, and it won't always point at Polaris in the future. Sometimes it'll point at empty space. Sometimes it pointed and will point at other stars. There was a time when Thuban in Draco was the pole star. That's because of the precessional wobble on the Earth's axis. The extended north pole of the Earth isn't always pointing at the same place. Over a cycle of 25,920 years, it's doing that.
That's why the pole star changes. At the same time, on the horizon, and we know that ancient cultures had a great interest in particular moments of the year, particularly the equinoxes, when night and day are of equal length. It was an obsession of ancient cultures. What was the constellation that lay in the place on the horizon where the sun rose on the spring equinox? What was the constellation that housed the sun? This is familiar language in astrology. What's the constellation that housed the sun on the spring equinox? In our epoch, it's the constellation of Pisces. We live in the age of Pisces, near the end of it, as a matter of fact. It's not an accident that the early Christians used the fish as their symbol, because Christianity began at very near the beginning of the age of Pisces. Each one of these zodiacal ages lasts for 2,160 years. And then the sun transits out of, on the equinox, transits out of one constellation and into another. So we indeed do live in the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Because of the precessional motion of the Earth, because of this change, this wobble on the Earth's axis, the constellation that houses the sun on the equinox is shifting out of Pisces and into Aquarius. That shift will be complete within the next 100 or 150 years. What we have here is a process that operates at the rate of 1 degree every 72 years. We allocate 30 degrees to each of the 12 constellations of the zodiac. Multiply 72 by 30 and you get 2,160. That's a zodiacal age. Take the whole cycle of the zodiac, the whole 12 constellations, each with 2,160 years housing the sun on the spring equinox, and you get what the ancients called the great year, when everything cycles back to the beginning and the whole process starts again. Do you follow? That's 25,920 years. It's the heartbeat is 1 degree every 72 years. It is defined by a key motion of our planet. That number, 43,200, is a multiple of 72. It's directly related to that number. And it's not as though we're confined to Giza and the Great Pyramid. Those numbers are found all over the world. They're found in ancient mythology. Osiris, after all, was killed by Set and his 72 conspirators. The number occurs in the ancient Egyptian texts. It occurs in the number of syllables in the Rig Veda in India. It occurs in Norse mythology. It's found all around the world. There's an intense focus on this system of numbers. So it can't be an accident that the same system of numbers crops up in the Great Pyramid, and that not only does the Great Pyramid give us the dimensions of the Earth, but that it does so on a scale defined by the Earth itself. That's an incredibly clever piece of work that we're looking at there.
Could the ancient builders have given us a monument to decode our human existence? Interestingly enough, the numbers Tesla was obsessed with show up in the equations of the Great Pyramid. The numbers Graham has concluded from his research on the pyramid are 72, 43,200, 600, 30, 25,920, and 2,160. And all of those numbers either equal 3, 6, or 9.
Then let's give you one more example. Let's track east from Giza. Let's go off to Cambodia, to Angkor in Cambodia. An amazing site. Again, very much devoted to the investigation of the mystery of death. The very word Angkor actually has a meaning in the ancient Egyptian language. It means life to the Horus. And lo and behold, it turns that Angkor, with its pyramidal monuments, Angkor lies exactly 72 degrees of longitude east of Giza. I do not believe that that is an accident or a coincidence. I think there's a deep and ancient connection. And what we're looking at in Angkor, because that site was continuously used by many later cultures, both Hindu and Buddhist, what we're looking at in Angkor is the latest incarnation of a much more ancient site, which, just like Giza, goes back into remote prehistory.
Could these precise calculations be spread across the globe and communicating a code? Is it possible this is what Nikola Tesla tapped into? Robert Bouval predicts this is the language of the future.
The way we read the universe is through mathematics and through its geometry. And through its mathematics and geometry, we need to know slowly through our evolution, we began to work out how triangles work, circles, ellipses, various shapes, and now work out the numbers, how they produce numbers. So having said this, the language that we as human beings will be communicating sounds a bit too science fiction, but I don't think we'll be talking English or Chinese in the next two centuries. Already we're using a different language, using computers. I think we'll be talking mathematics in the sense that to get a pure idea out, to get a pure thought out, and to structure it so that you understand exactly what I'm talking about, the shape, the size, the dimension, the weight, the speed, I'll have to number it, I'll have to put mathematics. The Great Pyramid is speaking that language, it's transmitting that language. It's a silent language, if you like, that needs to be read. We don't need Egyptologists, we don't need experts in hieroglyphs. It doesn't have hieroglyphs. We need mathematicians. We need mathematicians to read it. And that's one of the goals, is to tempt them to get into this. We've moved in a direction where we rely on external knowledge. We seem to think that the answer is out there and we look for it. Well, the answer may be inside us. I truly believe this. And therefore, we need to rechange how we see ourselves and how we educate ourselves. I think what's interesting now is that the science is beginning to sort of touch the frontiers of what you would call in general terms spirituality. We begin to realize that the universe is mental. It is a mental universe. And we need to think in different forms, not just purely classical science.
If indeed the purpose of the Great Pyramid was to educate humans on our place in time and space, could it also be a device to help change our consciousness?
I have for a long while argued that the central concept of certainly the pyramids of Egypt, and I think the case is true all over the world, was to do with the transformation of human consciousness. Whatever else the Great Pyramid is, the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt, whatever else it is for sure an instrument that works upon human consciousness.
Could the Great Pyramid be a monument that was built to withstand all catastrophes so that humanity could always have the codes to the universe? Standing near the pyramid is another monument that has baffled experts for ages.
In the 1990s, when I first started studying the Sphinx, what I determined is that it must go back to an earlier climatic period. When I initially calibrated these, I knew that it had to be at least 5 to 7,000 BC. Since then, I've continued my studies, and I'm convinced at this point that we have to go back to at least around 10,000 BC.
Up next, the code left behind by the Sphinx.
We hope you enjoyed this insightful presentation from Gaia. After-school subscribers can join Gaia and watch two complete seasons of Ancient Civilizations absolutely free. Just click the link in the description, but act fast. This offer is only available for a limited time.